back. Mr. Dave Ricky was a member of Houston Health Clubs. He was in our health club getting a workout when he tripped and fell on our jogging track, just covered with AstroTurf. He brought two causes of action, one for negligence for premise defect and us covering the track with AstroTurf, and the other under the DTPA for an implied warranty of safety. I brought a summary judgment, and the trial court granted summary judgment. In the appellate court, the court reversed on the misrepresentation grounds and said that Mr. Ricky could maintain a cause of action for misrepresentation. It's my contention that a premise owner, merely by having the doors of the premises open, does not imply, as a matter of law, misrepresentation that the premises are safe to come in on. It merely implies the duty that has always been enunciated by this court in Corbin, that an invitee in a premises liability case, the duty owned by the premise owner is merely to warn if they knew or should have known about a premise defect on the premises.
So basically, this court, through Corbin, could preempt the statute.
That's correct, Your Honor. It's incompatible. The negligence issues...
When did this court first get the right to preempt statutes?
Your Honor, it wouldn't necessarily preempt the statute, as you're saying, but the conduct of merely having the doors open does not rise as a matter of law as a misrepresentation that the premises are safe.
Could the legislature so require specifically by statute that every health club in the state does impliedly warrant that? I know it hasn't, but could it do that?
Specifically? The legislature could make an implied warranty.
Right. Just like a warranty of habitability or something that might be created by statute, the legislature could do that specifically, couldn't it?
That'd be correct.
And Corbin would go by the wayside?
Well, for health club owners, in that situation, if they wanted to make the health club owner an insurer of the property.
So why can't it have the same effect through the Deceptive Practices Act?
Your Honor, in this case, the argument that I have is that the premises, just by having it open, is not conduct that rises to a level of a misrepresentation or a representation that we are anything but open for business.
Is there any claim in this case that there is some written representation that has been made through advertisement or otherwise concerning the condition of the premises?
In the appellate court, it was conceded that it was merely that we had shown the track on TV or in our advertising brochures. There was never any express representation about the track other than it existed inside of our health club. The other problem with bringing a misrepresentation cause of action is that it changed the law in creating a strict premises liability cause of action for premises owners. This will have several public policy problems if that's to be the law in this state. First of all, many premise owners are small business people that could be severely hurt or affected by the application of strict liability to their premises merely by being open for business. Also, it would do away with the comparative responsibility the intent of the legislature was to have a comparative responsibility. And thirdly, it also would have a problem with the person that's on the premises is one of the people who is in the best position to see if there's any defects on the premises and avoid them. They have a responsibility also.
Mr. Pritchard, does the DTPA establish certain representations in a consumer transaction? Does the DTPA laundry list create certain representations as a matter of law that are made in a consumer transaction?
No, the laundry list merely tells you what acts, if you violate any of those lists, then you have a deceptive act of practice.
So does the DTPA then, DTPA is operative when a representation is made and that representation violates one or more of the laundry lists.
Correct. There has to be a deceptive act or practice that causes the claimant's harm.
So to get to a cause of action on the DTCA laundry list, we have to look to the transaction that occurred and whether or not a representation was made as a part of that transaction that violated one laundry list.
That's correct.
What, under what theory do the plaintiffs say a representation occurred in this transaction?
Merely the status of having our doors open for business and merely the status of having the track in our health club. They're saying, I think we'll hear reference to the case called Priestwood versus Taylor, which says that a premise owner, when they have their doors open, impliedly represents they have a reasonable duty of safety. It's my position that the reasonable duty of safety is nothing more than the negligence standard. By having our doors open, we represent that if we know about a premise defect.
The only duty you're aware of on a premises is the duty of an invitee to apprise them of conditions of which you are aware and which they are not aware.
Correct.
That's the only duty you're aware of that exists. And if they're tripping at the premises, there's no representation that has occurred as part of this transaction.
That's correct.
Would your statement be the same if the product that they used on your facilities, a weight machine, broke while they were using it as opposed to jogging on a track?
I think in the health club scenario, it might not be any different than now. It might not be any different. But Mr. Rickey, as a consumer, he would be a consumer in this case, but he came on the health club premises to use were the goods or the services provided by the health club. The weight equipment and the track are such. If he were not on the track, he was just on the floor of the health club, then in that situation, that wouldn't be the goods or services that he'd come into the health club to use. The floor is necessary by the fortuity of gravity. It's just like the air is necessary around. So what your question was, if he came in and put himself on a piece of exercise equipment, the analysis may not be different depending on whether he probably would have brought it under different subsections of DTPA.
If he came in and he used the weight machine and it broke and injured him, he would not have any, it would be a different situation. He had no right to presume, or he would have no right to presume that the weight machine was going to be safe either?
Well,
you've confused me now, because I believe Justice Senior's question was, well, if he came in as opposed to using your track and used the weight machine broke, he had no right to rely on the safety of the machine. There's no implied warranty or anything, a representation that it's safe to use. It's a health club. You invite people in to improve their health or maintain their health and not to risk injury.
Correct, Your Honor. Under the laundry list, just by merely the fact of having the piece of equipment in the health club, but I'm saying that is not a representation that the equipment is safe or not. If there was an implied warranty or a warranty theory then that would attach that he could bring through the DTPA with the piece of equipment, that would be another story. But merely having the equipment on the health club premises is not a representation about anything about that equipment.
Basically, what you have posted on every piece of equipment in there is a use at your own risk sign. Is that correct?
Well, there would be a warranty theory that if it was a products case, or you could make a products case out of it, or bring a negligence case for it. What I'm saying in this case is he's brought a misrepresentation, and the mere fact that the machinery is sitting there is not a representation.
Actually, it's a health club, and people come in to use this equipment. You're not representing that it's safe to use when you invite them in to use it to improve or maintain good health?
Right, Your Honor. As a matter of fact, in our contract that Mr. Rickey signed has a clause in there that says you may be injured on this health club. Obviously, engaging in physical activity is going to be more, would present more of a problem or hazards than just going into a grocery store, for instance.
Mr. Pritchard, did the plaintiffs bring a breach of warranty claim?
They had brought a breach of warranty of safety. It was my contention in the appellate court that, or in the trial court, that that wasn't an existing warranty that existed. Therefore, it cannot be brought through. Warranty of safety doesn't exist. Can't be brought through the DTPA. The DTPA doesn't create any new warranties. It merely provides a vehicle to bring existing warranties already through. Opposing counsel didn't raise that issue at the appellate court, and it wasn't reviewed by the appellate court in this matter.
Is there any evidence in the record what I'm reaching for is the comparative safety of AstroTurf as opposed to some other kind of running surface and what knowledge the health club might have had of comparing the relative pluses and minuses.
I think that would have been better brought through Ricky's negligence cause of action. That is not on the record at this time. Don't have time. Thank you.
Any questions? Thank you. The court is ready to hear argument.
May it please the court, Mr. Hugh J. Howerton and Mr. Walter Wolfer represent argument for the respondent. Mr. Hugh Howerton will open the first hearing.
May it please this court. Your Honors, beginning with petitioner's motion for summary judgment and continuing through the appellate process that brought us here today, I want to emphasize that they have never attacked the specific elements of the DTPA in Mr. Rickey's case. They have never attacked the fact that Mr. Rickey was a consumer under the DTPA. They have never attacked fact that any implied representations were made to him by the petitioners regarding the use of their jogging tracks.
Does the DTPA create implied representations in the sale or use, in connection with the sale of goods?
As I understand it, there have been cases previously reviewed that have upheld the idea of an implied representation in a DTPA case. In this particular case.
But the question is, does the DTPA itself create these representations, or are they pre-existing at the common law, and the DTPA just gives this additional remedy and recovery framework?
I think the cases that have come down and basically said that representations under the DTPA can either be expressed or they can be implied, and then through that vehicle, then the
one more time, though. DTPA one day wasn't in effect, and the next day it is in effect.
Yes, sir.
Are there any new implied representations that exist at the law in Texas merely because this statute was passed? Or is it merely an enabling vehicle?
I think it's an enabling vehicle.
So we can look back to cases from year one to see whether or not this is a proper area for an implied representation.
I think I probably know. Yes, Your Honor, you can.
And what is the implied representation?
In this particular case, Mr. Rickey went to the petitioner's health club to jog. There was an implied representation that the jogging track had characteristics, uses, and benefits that later turned out that it did not have. It also had specific representations under a 1746B7 laundry list. In other words, that it had uses and benefits or characteristics or it was of a certain standard or quality, which we contend that it wasn't.
Are there, does a grocery store have implied representations that there are no slick spots on the floor?
Well, the petitioners basically contend that if this court upholds the appellate decision in this case, that there will be a floodgate of litigation against.
Well, I just want you to answer my question. Is there one in that case?
In a grocery store case,
yes,
if I'm understanding your question correctly, if in a grocery store case, is there an implied representation that there's
there are no slick spots on the floor?
Conceivably, yes.
And is there an implied representation with respect to premises generally that there are no dangerous holes or latent defects that you're going to fall into?
Well, that idea has been around for quite some time.
So the answer is yes.
Yes, sir.
In all of those circumstances, if you, for example, went into a grocery store and slipped on a grape, you could sue the store under the DTPA?
Conceptually, yes.
Well, but conceptually and practically and really, and go to the jury and see what you can recover.
I believe that you can, Your Honor. I think that this case is distinguishable from that case in that Mr. Rickey paid for the use of the premises, and Mr. Rickey also entered into a contract with the petitioner. And up until the time that the HEBs or the Dillards or the taverns of Texas start requiring its patrons to pay a fee before they can enter the premises and enter a contract.
So Sam's Warehouse would be a different situation?
Factually, yes, Your Honor.
But that, I mean, the traditional thinking has always been that if you're holding yourself open for business, trying to get somebody to buy product, that's the same. You owe the same duty as you would to somebody who's paid a fee to get in.
Correct.
They're invitees.
Correct.
In those situations.
That's why I believe that conceptually, in those type of cases, you could bring a DTPA action if you slip and fell in an HEB. But that issue is currently not before the court.
In other words, you're a consumer for DTPA purposes once you walk through the door, whether there's an entrance fee or not.
I believe so.
Harrington, what are the warranties generally that accompany the sale or lease of goods?
Well, I guess it would depend on, as I understand the question, just from a common law standpoint, the warranties of the goods, that they be of a particular standard. I mean, those would be relegated to, I guess, a discussion of UCC as it relates to goods.
And you would have a DTPA cause of action for a breach of warranty, would you not?
In this case? Or in your scenario?
In the sale of goods or leases of goods, you have certain warranties that go with them, and if you breach that warranty, would you not have a cause of action for DTPA, which says a breach of warranty is a violation of DTPA?
If those warranties are created outside of the DTPA is the mechanism in which you can prosecute that action. It doesn't create the warranties in and of itself.
So what is the authority for this being an implied warranty?
Well, and I want to clarify the misnomer that it's an implied warranty case is not what the respondent, Mr. Rickey, is arguing or has ever argued. He simply said that he should have the right to bring a DTPA laundry list violation in this case. In other words, he should be able to prosecute two specific DTPA laundry list violations based on the facts of this case. One was a 17.46B5, which said that the tract didn't have characteristics and uses and benefits, which was represented to have, but later turned that it didn't. And under B7.
Is that an express representation or implied?
I think they could be either.
Which
but
is
in this case, it was an implied representation which was never contested throughout the appellate courts by the petitioners.
Are there any other implied representation cases in Texas under B5?
Yes, Your Honor. In this case, however, in order for it basically turned out where the petitioners were saying, no, you can't bring it, and I was saying, yes, you can, and so it began almost like a discussion of my three-year-old son with his friend fighting over the toy, saying, no, it's not, yes, it is, no, it's not, yes, it is. On later reflection, it became apparent to me that in order for the petitioner to win in this case, they must commit the court to do the following three things. Number one, they must commit the court to turn its back on the literal language of the DTPA, which requires and mandates a liberal construction of the act. They secondly must turn their back on 23 years of precedent, which has upheld the literal and liberal construction of the DTPA. And thirdly, and most troubling, the court then is required to turn its back on the legislative history of the Act and the intentions of the legislature and substitute its own ideology. In other words, it must commit itself to usurping the power given to the legislature by the Texas Constitution in order to carve out an exception, in this case, to the applicability of the CTPA.
Let me try another alternative to your three. Sometimes courts will look to the nature of the damages sought, whether they be for economic loss or whether they be in the nature of tort damages for personal injury, to determine the gravamen of the suit and thus characterize the nature of the claim that's been brought. What damages did you seek in, or did Mr. Rickey seek in this case for this misrepresentation?
Personal injury damages, which as you will notice, have been adopted by the legislature in their 1989 amendments, even when they simply referred to in personal injury and death cases, we're going to amend the DTPA to allow a comparative fault scheme to apply to those cases. If the legislator had seen it fit not to allow DTPA cause of action in this type of case, they would have said so. And I believe then if the court begins now substituting its own opinion for the legislature, then we set tremendous and dangerous precedents, beginning with the analysis of this decision.
The legislature said in 1989 that you may use the DTPA to sue for personal injury.
I think what they said is we're going to amend the DTPA in personal injury and death cases to allow comparative fault, which we find in Chapter 33 of the Civil Practice and Remedies Code, to apply in those type of cases. So I believe, yes, it is the legislature's intent to allow DTPA actions in personal injury and wrongful death cases.
Did the legislature change the recognized measures of damages for misrepresentation? In other words, this court in the past has said that generally for misrepresentation you're entitled to either out-of-pocket measure of damages or benefit of the bargain. Has the legislature spoken in this area and said you may recover personal injury-type tort damages in a DTPA case based on an alleged misrepresentation?
I don't think that the legislature has given any specific language. I know that if we look at the pattern jury charge right now, it will allow us as trial attorneys to submit personal injury damages in a DTPA case.
Has this court ever held that for a misrepresentation you may recover personal injury type damages as opposed to benefit of the bargain or out-of-pocket damages?
I don't think that the court has made a distinction and limited a personal injury case simply to benefit of the bargain or out-of-pocket. I believe that the case law as it exists allows the personal injury litigant simply to submit his normal elements of damages that are recognized in common law in a DTPA scenario.
Can you cite a case?
Not at this time.
Would you, by perhaps supplementary letter,
identify
any cases that you
can
find for us?
Yes, sir. I'm going to allow the rest of my time.
Excuse me, before you do, you said there were two laundry list items, the DTPA line. You never got to the second.
Okay.
Or if you did, it got by me.
Okay. The first was 1746B5. The second was 1746B7. It was later termed an implied warranty of safety by the petitioners, which I believe is a misnomer and misunderstands the respondent's allegations in the DTPA.
What was 1746B7? The first one was the characteristics and qualities represented to have. What was the second?
I believe 1746B7 says that B5 was characteristics, uses, and benefits. B7 says it was of a certain standard quality or grade when it was another. And since this case has come up through summary judgment, there is no evidence in the record as to the suitability now of AstroTurf on a jogging track, but if it's remanded to trial, I believe there certainly will be.
Any other questions? Thank you, Counsel.
Thank you.
Since Mr. Harrison's time is extended with questions, I ask that Mr. Wolfram be given his full 5 minutes.
10 minutes.
Well, I think you had to give 10 minutes?
I hope so.
10 minutes. They'd be given his full 10 minutes.
Any objection? All right.
May it please the court, I want to thank the court for permitting me to come in as an amicus curiae and file a brief this morning. However, I am aligned essentially with the plaintiff this morning, and that's why I encroach upon his time. I want to, at some point in this presentation, to discuss, I'll address your particular concerns specifically and give you the citations of the cases that you're looking for.
Counsel, I asked a question to the counsel for the respondents. Has there been a DTPA case that dealt with an implied representation under the laundry list? And he said yes. Since then, I've had a chance to read your question, too. And I see a lot of cases that dance around it, but is there authority in Texas directly on that proposition?
The Royal Globe versus Barkin Sultan's case was issued by this court, talked about an implied representation concerning the policy coverage. If I can get to that, if I can find that. In the brief, has the court been furnished a copy of the brief that I filed this morning?
Yes, we have.
Page 12.
The Royal Globe case talked about a representation, but it did not assign, that is the DTPA case, Article 2121. The court did not assign that representation to either a Category 5, 7, or 12 under the laundry list. It would fit in other, the representation that was implied in fact by the court would fit under either a 5 or 7, standard greater quality, uses, characteristics, and benefits, but it was not specifically assigned by the court at any level to a category. Does that answer you? Does that address the question? Could I invite the court to look at page 5 if you have that? I have a certain way of presenting things. I don't anticipate that you all will remember much what I say. And I'm hoping that in this brief that I put together yesterday, isn't that something? That's why you don't have a table of authorities. Just before 5 o'clock, my computer shut down and did the most wonderful thing, and I couldn't bring it. And I had to either come or leave it behind or leave me behind. So I came without the table of authority. The issues before this court seem to be threefold. Then I list four. The only thing that I can do well in math is I can divide any figure in the world by three fairly promptly. But there are still four issues as I see it. Did the plaintiff state a cause of action under the DTPA? Whether in a DTPA case, representations under the laundry list may be made by implication. And whether for representations made under the laundry list, subdivisions 5 and 7, there must be a showing of scienter. And number 4, for the Corbin and Safeway, Inc., and its progeny, preempts the DTPA for the benefit of shopkeepers. And it seems to me that that's what we have to deal with in this case. The case is before this court for all purposes, even though you seem to have granted it on one issue only, and that is whether or not the court may assign this type of a case solely to a negligence theory. Issue number one restated is to what I'm doing in that section is trying to explain what the law is in relation to standing to bring the lawsuit. That's not been raised at the trial court level, apparently. It has not been raised at the Court of Appeals, but it may be raised here, I would think, if the briefs, and I have not seen their briefs, but I would think that has to be addressed. Whether or not Mr. Rickey is a consumer and his claim arises out of the goods or services acquired by lease or purchase, that qualifies, that threshold must be met in order for him to have standing our qualification to bring the lawsuit under the DTPA. Now the question is, did he seek or acquire goods or services by lease or purchase? If he did, and did his claims arise out of the goods or services so acquired? If he meets that two-pronged test, then he may bring the lawsuit under the DTPA. Question came up a moment ago. Is there a difference between the fact that he's complaining about the real estate or the personalty being used in the health club? That is not relevant because the statute defines goods in terms of both real estate and tangible goods. So there is no distinction under the Act between whether it is real estate and whether it is personal property. Then, because of the nature of the description or the definition of a consumer, it does not make any difference whether you classify this floor as real estate or the use of the floor as services. The Court of Appeals classified the use of the floor, the use of the facilities, as a service. Whether it had classified it as the acquisition of real estate by lease would not make any difference in the analysis of how we treat the case.
Mr. Wolfarm, if we assume that this is a lease of a good, I mean, we're arguing about service good, it doesn't make any difference to me, but if this is a lease of a good or a lease of a service, where does this implied warranty, is what I call it, arise that this is a safe thing? What duty has Texas recognized in the sale of a good of an implied warranty of safe use or an implied representation of safe use? Where does that come from?
May I direct you to page 12, please? First, I think it is very important to come to grips with, the State Bar asked me to do something, and a lawyer will promise anything that's 9 months away from the time they make the promise. And I'm not peddling this, but I'd like for you all to have it. The State Bar owns this book. But I have all of this stuff compiled and categorized in a fashion that I think is fairly accessible. State, not too far from here. They should have some of these. Implied warranties only fall in six categories in Texas. They're very, very limited. Implied warranty is simply not applicable to this case. There are no implied warranties under the common law. There are no statutory implied warranties applicable to this case. Statutory implied warranties, there's just a host of them. But there's only six common law implied warranties, not one of which applies to this case. We're now to a laundry list item, and that is subdivisions 5 and 7 under the laundry list. That is, was a representation made concerning standard, grade, or quality, or was a representation made concerning uses, characteristics, and benefits, and if so, how? It was representations by implication, conduct, or silence. And here is a listing of the cases on implied in fact, the circumstances. Now, on the previous page, I started down a series of examples 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. 1 and 2 are personal experiences. 3, 4, and 5 examples are actual cases.
The implied in fact would be you look at all the circumstances and see if there was a representation as to the quality of the...
Yes. Do the circumstances imply to you?
So if this were about 3/4 the going rate of other health clubs, and it looked kind of ratty when you went in the door and it was kind of beat up looking, that would not be an implication?
No, that would be some evidence of the nature of the implied representation. But just be an evidentiary issue would not rise to a matter of law. Now, if you got there and they were not furnishing you lights, air conditioning, heat, and you saw holes in the floor, then you might rise to the level of a certain set of facts as a matter of law. But essentially, you're talking about an evidentiary circumstance that the jury or the trier of fact considers in arriving at whether or not implied representations made. Now, let's take over.
You would agree, I take it, with Mr. Harrington, that if you went into a grocery store, there would, on almost every case, be an implication, implied representation that there's nothing slippery on the floor.
I would not categorize it that way. What I would do is categorize the implied representation is that the premises themselves, all aspects of the premises, are reasonably suitable and reasonably safe. That is what I think the implied representation. I think it's an evidentiary representation by implication of jury issue.
But if you slip on a grate and fall down and break your leg, that's not reasonably safe, is it?
That is not reasonably safe. But whether or not there's that is a particular spot is not slick is subsumed in the larger issue, that is, there's a representation that the premises are reasonably safe. That's not a Walter Wolfram invention, Your Honor. Look on page 13, please. Representations implied by law, by conduct, by silence, by signs. Now, I think there's something very important that I think is important to the court that I would like to address, and that's on page 20. This relates to the issue of preemption. How much time am I out?
The time is expired.
Let me ask
you, Mr. Walker.
I think if one of us asks you a question, you can certainly answer that, and I wanted to give you an opportunity to identify some of the cases that had to do with personal injury damages and the questions I was asking your co-counsel just a few minutes ago. You said you might be able to help us out.
Sure. Personal injury damages, Your Honor, before the 1989 amendment of Section 17.50, in the case of International Armament Corporation versus King, 686, second, 595, this court upheld a case where a DTPA claimant had dovetailed a breach of an implied warranty of merchantability of a gun and enforced the breach of that implied warranty, very serious personal injury, enforced that under the DTPA. And so that was a specific enforcement of breach of implied statutory warranty. In the case of Birchfield versus Texarkana Memorial Hospital, 747 second, 361, a child was declared a consumer under the DTPA because she acquired health services through the efforts of her parents. They held there was a failure to disclose. Now that was at a time when a claimant could enforce any deceptive trade practice. Didn't have the constriction of the laundry list, but it was under 17.46. And it was in the nature of a laundry list violation, personal injury claim. And then the issue of damages that you raised, and that is, must be that answered in this way. This court in Stewart Title versus Sterling, in a footnote, stated that DTPA claims are regulated in contribution by Chapter 32 of the Civil Practice and Remedy Code. Section 1 of Chapter 32 says that this statute regulates contribution in tort cases not otherwise regulated by a statutory scheme. Negligence cases are regulated by Chapter 33. Thus, we have DTPA claims are tort cases and are not negligence cases. Now, common law damages are your recoverable, but common law damages under DTPA are no longer categorized in the two categories of benefit of the bargain or out of pocket. Because in the fairly recent case in this court of Henry S. Miller Company versus Bynum, sorry, I have 35 Supreme Court Journal recitation 1992. The total loss and damage are measured as the total loss sustained to the consumer as a result of the deceptive trade practice, and you specifically rejected the compartmentalization of damages into out-of-pocket or benefit of the bargain. It is damages in fact under that case. I appreciate being here. It's always good to be here and see people that I've known a long time. And you all are always very kind. Thank you so
much.
Any
other questions? Thank you, counsel.
There are three elements that a plant needs to prove to bring a DTPA cause of action. One, that he's a consumer. Two, that the goods and services that he's seeking to acquire form the basis of his complaint. And three, that there's some deceptive act that is a producing cause of his harm. In the case, the Ricky case, the health club case, there is no deceptive act that caused Mr. Ricky's harm. All that the health club did was say that it was open for business. That does not rise to, that's not conduct, that's not a statement that or anything that could be implied to be a representation that Mr. Ricky would be safe at all times when he's in our premises.
Do you think there can ever be an implied representation under the lottery list?
There are cases that talk about implied representations on the laundry list. They all have some sort of conduct or facts that would give rise to conduct which could be called a misrepresentation or a representation.
But it's really a case-by-case analysis that a court has to make, in your opinion. We have to look at these circumstances and say, this is not enough, but some other conduct of somebody merely being open for business and someone coming to seek their service might be.
Right. If we had said, Mr. Ricky, this floor is...
No, I don't mean to say we're not talking about express. Okay. Talking about implied.
There are different facts that could give rise to implied misrepresentation.
So it's fact-intensive scrutiny that the court has to make before sending it to the jury. That's your position.
Right. I think the response is trying to say that
if the health club had put up a sign on that track, watch your step, would that take care of it? The health club, you have this jogging track out there. This is a jogging track, but watch your step. Be careful. You might stumble on something within the jogging track.
I think that goes to a reasonableness or a cause of action or standard that we've already had in Texas, the negligence cause of action. If there's a,
but because they don't put up that sign, don't they kind of reasonably imply that this is a safe track that we've installed here and that you can run without having to watch your step?
By not putting up a sign, just merely having the track exist there, I don't think that is a representation of anything.
But it's a track, and it's a track that's put there for the purpose of jogging. Because jogging, a place to jog is one of the reasons for having a health club. And so this is a jogging track. And wouldn't a jogger be reasonable to expect that there wouldn't be anything in that track that would cause him to trip unless he's warned ahead of time?
Yeah, I think that goes back to what he would reasonably expect, and I think all I can reasonably expect is what's been handed from the Supreme Court in the Corbin case, that if we know of a problem with the track, that we need to warn you about the problem with the track. Other than that, I think it's just representative that there's a track there. I think the respondent's trying to say that if this would be the same in a grocery store case, the analysis would be the same. I think it would be totally different in a grocery store case. In that case, the floor, the slippery spot on the floor, the grape that's on the floor is not the basis of the bargain that the consumer has come in to the store for. It's different than the track. When Mr. Ricky came in to use the track, that was the basis of his
bargain. Doesn't sound like the case a lot stronger for the plaintiff in this situation than in the grocery store, where, in fact, it's common knowledge that things are spilled on floors, and you can look and see what's on the floor, and the floor is not unique to that kind of business, whereas this track is using a surface that, in fact, you're paying to come to. It is special, and it is unique. And the way it's designed is not something that the ordinary person is familiar with in everyday living. Does that make a stronger case for a DTPA claim here that does not extend to the whole world?
All that I had to do in bringing the summary judgment is to negate one element of plaintiff's cause of action. An element that I believe that I've negated is that there's no misrepresentation merely by having your doors open, or no representation of safety merely by having your doors open for business. So I think my case is as strong as a grocery store case. And I think in the grocery store case, there would be two elements that would be negated here on summary judgment. One would be that the slippery spot on the floor is not the goods or service that the person came in to buy. They came in to buy the beans. And that's what makes this case different from a grocery store case, even farther removed in premises liability, DTPA, cost of action like this. The court needs to seriously consider this case as opening the floodgates for lawsuits for strict liability causes of action for premise owners. Anytime you're open for business, you can have to imply a warranty or a misrepresentation or representation of safety in any accident on the floor or any accident in the store. The premise owner would be the insurer of that accident.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
That concludes the argument in the third cause. The foregoing arguments are submitted on briefs and oral arguments, and the marshal will please adjourn the court.
Judge, please rise. Oyez, oyez, oyez. The Honorable Supreme Court.